All right, well, let's get the show on the road. So my name's Greg Cosanza. I'm a program manager on the VMM team, or within System Center. My core area right now of focus is on networking in VMM 2012 Service Pack 1. I've been working on networking for, I've been on the VMM team for about 2.5 years, working on networking for probably the last 7-8 months or so. So there's a lot of exciting things coming in the network area. I kind of consider it the dawn of a new era. I think many of the people here do. You've probably heard a lot over the last few days about software-defined networking. It's a term that we're kind of throwing around a lot, and we think it's the direction that the industry is going. The ability to essentially define a lot of what previously you'd have to go to the network admin to do. Now the server admin, the fabric admin are going to be able to do that. So, we're about to go on an odyssey now to see how VMM is taking advantage of this new era going forward with Service Pack 1. So the goals today, first of all, to get you prepared so you understand, what VMM is doing, what's coming down the road. Before we go too far into the future, though, we're going to start with System Center 2012. In VMM 2012. How many of you currently use VMM 2012 or have installed it? All right, good. Some of you are getting your feet wet. How many of you are on an older version still? Okay, good. So this first part will really target all of you. So you understand, if you really need to figure out how the current concepts work, I'm going to fill you in on those. Then I'm going to build on those, and we're going to start to talk about what's coming up in Service Pack 1. The VMM Service Pack 1, it will be a CDP of it. CDP 2 will be available, I believe, tomorrow, the 15th, available for you to download. You'll see some of what I'm going to show you will be available in that CDP. And that CDP is targeting Windows Server 2012 RC. So we'll have an RTM at some point. Second half of this year, I believe, we've announced. All right, so let's get started. So when we were working on VMM 2012, there were some scenarios we wanted to focus on to get kind of understand what our customers want to do around networking. We heard things like, I want my VM to connect to the corp network. Very few people, when they're creating a VM, think, I want to connect to VLAN 5, or they don't want to connect to subnet, 10.0.0.0/24. They know what the connectivity they want is based on, where they want to go and what else they want to talk to. So we came up with this concept of a logical network that essentially defines a logical abstraction of the network so that you don't need to, when you're creating your VM, connect to the subnet or the VLAN that will give you that connectivity that you desire. You instead just say, I want this VNIC to connect to corp, I want this VNIC to connect to the internet, and so on. Now, of course, you want to make sure that your template can deploy anywhere, and if you have multiple environments, corp may mean something different in building 42 than it does in building 27, for example. Or in your second floor data center, first floor data center, maybe have different subnets and VLANs as well. So you want to be able to still reference that single logical network, but deploy in multiple places, in different locations, and get the appropriate settings based on where you deploy. So we came up with this concept of logical network definitions. So those really define a particular site. In our UI, we actually call them network sites. So if you look at the commandlets, you see logical network definitions. In the UI, after some of the initial feedback we got, we felt it was more easier for our customers to consume by calling it a network site rather than network definition. And of course, once we understand what your subnets consist of, we can start to assign IP addresses automatically. We heard that that's something you want to do. You want to be able to pull them from pools. So we introduced IP pools that we manage. We're able to pull addresses from those pools, configure the networking for the VMs that we deploy. We're able to basically get the VMs that we deploy fully configured for the network that they're connected to. And then, of course, once you can deploy VMs and you see our service concept, you want to be able to scale out those services, right? So we have multi-tier services are now in VMM 2012. If you went to Steven's session just now, you probably learned how to build one of those. But when you have tiers that you can scale out from one to more than one, you have to have a way to still be able to get to those through a single point or through a load balancer. So we added support for load balancers. That lets you access your service through a single virtual IP, and then you get the dynamic IPs at the other end. So this slide right here pretty much sums up, you know, these concepts that we really focused on for VMM 2012 to really abstract out the networking concepts so that we can do all these really cool things that I just talked about. So for logical networks, you know, being able to classify for a VM and being able to let you model your network topology in the way that your network administrator, you know, has it defined. And then being able to map that to your host and clusters, which is where the network definitions come in. For address pools, it's not just IP address pools we manage. We also manage MAC address pools as well, because you need to be able to, again, allocate MAC addresses and deallocate them. You may have in different locations in your environment, you may want to have different ranges used in different host groups. So we have the ability to associate your MAC address pools with host groups as well. And then load balancer support. We have integration with a number of partners and load balancers, but basically we have a plugin interface so you can add a load balancer device into VMM, manage it, and then configure it, and then, you know, deploy your applications and have the load balancer configured to be able to you know, serve up the traffic to that application correctly. So these are the main core concepts, the pillars of networking in VMM 2012. So the logical network abstraction, again, gives you different classes depending on what you want to go to. It's up to you to define what those mean in conjunction with your network administrator. That's very important. You'll find out later. You know, we're doing some things to make that coordination easier in Service Pack 1. But now you have to basically ask your network admin for the resources you need. They have to give it to you, and then you have to enter it into VMM to get it up and running, configured that way. So what are the objects looking like in VMM that let you do this? You know, I've talked, kind of introduced you to these on the previous slides. Let's see what the relationships are. You may have seen these if you've used 2012, you've looked at PowerShell, or you've seen these in the UI. The first thing we're going to start with is the logical network, right? You name it based on what your connectivity is. Now, another thing about logical networks as we've defined them today is that they aren't intended for multi-tenancy. They're intended to map to your network as it's laid out for your physical infrastructure, you know, generally within a private cloud in an enterprise. So I'll talk about later on about how what we're doing to allow for multi-tenancy as well. So the first thing that you do with your logical network is you add logical network definitions to it. You can have many of those behind a logical network that basically define the different areas. Those then you scope to particular host groups, and those host groups represent your sites that you're going to that this logical network definition is available in. Now, within a logical network definition, you can have multiple subnet VLANs. Now, these are where you're actually starting to define your IP address space and the VLANs you're going to be connecting to. You can have multiple of these. Generally, that's used, again, not for isolation in this case in VMM 2012, but to segment out your broadcast traffic so that you don't have, you know, one VLAN serving up an entire, you know, floor of your data center. You can split it up into multiple VLANs. But there's a key requirement for all these VLANs and subnets within a logical network definition is that they must be what we call consider connected. You need to be able to communicate from one VLAN to another VLAN. Otherwise, we're going to pull one out and you're going to expect the VMs to be able to talk to each other. And if they're not connected, then that's not going to happen. So we consider any subnet VLAN within a logical network definition and even within a logical network to be equal. And we'll essentially pull them out as we see fit based on utilization. Now, you can also have subnet VLANs with IPv4, IPv6. We support both of those as well, so that's another reason why you would have multiple subnet VLANs within a single logical network definition. Then finally, you have the IP pool object. That's what contains all of your IP settings, contains the range of addresses you want to allocate. It contains the DNS server. It contains the WIN server, the gateways. So basically anything you need to configure on the network stack for that VNIC. And then finally, you have to have a way to map all of this to the physical network adapter. This is where we see a lot of people get into trouble when they try to deploy a VM and connect to a particular logical network, but then placement doesn't rate the host with positive stars because, well, you don't know why. Well, generally the reason is the physical network adapter isn't hooked up to the logical network. you need to go into the host adapter properties, and I'll show you this in, when I jump into my demo. You need to hook it up to the physical adapter, say which logical networks it's connected to. You can even go down to the level of subnet VLAN if you know that even though it's in the host group, that that logical network definition is scoped to, it's not connected to every VLAN. You can select that as well. The host group for the physical network adapter comes from the host that that adapter is connected to, so you have that association as well. On the slide, when you see 1 to M, that generally means 1 to many. If you see M to M, that means many to many, so it's a, the relationships can get pretty complicated. And then every physical network adapter can be connected to one virtual switch. Remember, we're talking about VMM 2012, which supports Windows Server 2008 R2 and 2008. And what you connect, can connect to the virtual switch in the older version of Windows is somewhat limited. So you can only connect one physical network adapter to the switch, and then you can have many VMs attached to that. So that kind of gives you an overview of the network objects in VMM 2012. You know, kind of gives you the big picture of what we're starting with. So a lot, all of this still applies going forward in Service Pack 1, but we're just building on top of it. I already talked a fair amount about address pools. You know, IP pools, they basically, the address gets checked out when you deploy, and then it gets checked back in automatically when you delete the VM. If a VM gets created out of band, and we refresh it in, let's say you use the Hyper-V manager to create the VM, and we refresh that VM in, we'll query the guest tools to figure out what IP addresses are used by that VM. And if we match it up to a pool that we know about, we'll automatically allocate that because we know that that address is in use and we don't want to, you know, reallocate it to somebody else. So we do a number of things to make sure that, you know, our pools stay up to date based on what the actual environment looks like. That's a key thing to know because if sometimes you see that a VM, a VNIC has the address associated with it, or a VM. It's generally because when we refresh in the VM and we pull that address in through the guest tools, we don't know which VNIC it's actually associated with. In 2008 R2, we didn't have that ability to query that information, so we have to only associate it with the VM. If VMM creates the VM, then we know exactly which NIC has that address, and we'll grant the address to the NIC instead of the VM. So MAC pools work in a similar way. We allocate the MAC when we create the VNIC, essentially, and then we return it when the VM gets deleted. And then virtual IP pools. Within a, with your load balancer, you need to be able to define pools that your load balancer can use for allocating the virtual IPs. So these are associated with the load balancer. You can create VIP templates for your VIPs, and that basically defines what these virtual IPs are for. And we do it basically the same way. When you deploy a service, we will allocate addresses from the VIP, and then when you scale out, we'll allocate additional addresses as needed, and then scaling in as well. A little bit more about load balancers. We are integrated with a number of load balancer partners. We have F5, Brocade, and Citrix are our key partners. We include in the box, we include Microsoft NLB. So that we can do load balancing out of the box. But we do have providers. You need to get them from the different vendors in order to support load balancers in the box. Talked a fair amount about VIP templates. Different types of load balancing you can do when you configure the template. And there are actually two types of VIP templates as well. You can have VIP templates that are specific to a load balancer, in which case you tie the settings to the load balancer, or you can have general ones that can get applied across load balancer as well. When you do have the general ones, you don't have as many settings because you generally have to do the lowest common denominator, you know, that will be able to be applied to all the load balancers that you could potentially have in your environment. All right, so let's jump in. We'll actually get into demo and see actually how this stuff looks when we interact with it. Okay, so up and running, this is actually 2012 Service Pack 1 CTP2 build that I'm showing you. Everything I'm going to show in this first demo, though, is available in 2012 non-SP1. So when I go to the next demo, then I'll skip over to start showing you things that are in Service Pack 1. All right, so the first thing I'm going to show you is the logical network panel. We go down here under Fabric. The networking panel's new in 2012. And here's where we have all of our, basically keep track of all of our objects. You see, I have a number of logical networks. If you install the product and add a host to it, you'll notice that logical networks all of a sudden start getting created automatically. We do this so that if your environment has DHCP, we can do some auto-discovery for the logical networks. You have some logical networks to work with on your physical adapters right from the beginning, and you can start deploying VMs without going to a huge amount of configuration overhead, you know, before you can even get started. If you want to know how it creates those initial logical networks, you can go down to Settings, and then go to the General section, and we have a Network Settings area. So if we open up the properties of the network settings, you can see we match the logical network based on, by default, the first DNS suffix or the virtual network switch name if we can't find that. You can turn off the automatic creation of the logical network. So let's say you don't want those logical networks. Those aren't what you actually want to go with. You can turn that off. And then the other thing we can do, once we know what logical network is hooked up to the physical adapter, and we know what your VM wants, we can automatically create the virtual switch that's needed to connect those together if that virtual switch doesn't exist yet. Of course, if you don't want that, you can turn that off here too as well. So these are some of the network global network settings that apply across the VMM server. All right, so let's go back to Fabric. And first thing I'm gonna do is let's say we're setting up a new environment for, you know, the TechEd ShowLAN network, for example. So you want to create a new logical network for the ShowLAN connectivity. So that's basically available in a variety of places, you know, throughout the convention center. So the first thing you do is do create logical network. So I'm going to give it a name. I'm going to call it TechEd ShowLAN example. Hit next. And now here's where we define our network size. So these are the logical network definitions we talked about earlier. I'm going to go ahead and add one. So I would be building this network site table based on the information that I got from my network admin. So I would have told my network admin advance, okay, I need this many computers, you know, in the in the hands-on lab. I need this many servers in for the keynote, and so on. So they would come back and they'd give me a list of VLANs and subnets that I would then define for each one that are available in each of those areas. The network admin would go out in advance. They'd go out and configure their switch so that it knows, you know, what VLANs are where, configure their routers to route between them correctly. So now as the virtualization admin, you just enter that information in. So for example, give it whatever they give you. I'm basically just making this up for the demo, though, but they would give you real numbers to enter. And you can enter in as many subnets. If they need to segment the traffic, they can split it up into multiple subnets as well within a single host group. So I'm going to So if this was for the hands-on lab, I would assign this to the hands-on lab. I can then create another network site for, you know, the keynote rig, which has its own switch, its own VLAN, its own environment. And I'm going to insert a row for that. You know, this may be on 4, you know, and have another. Now, these IP subnets aren't allowed to overlap. We do check that to make sure that, you know, you don't enter it twice, because then we'd try to basically allocate the same address twice, and you wouldn't be able to route between it. I'm going to insert another row. Again, this would be based off of what my network admin gave me. Then I can finish. So now I've got my logical network created. I have my network definitions defined. Now within those subnets, I can now create my IP pools how I see fit. You know, assuming I own the entire subnet, I can define an IP pool for the entire range. Or if I was just given a smaller section of that subnet for my VMs, I can use a smaller range as well. So again, it depends on what your network admin gives you to say you have available for use. So, you know, I'll call this TechEd, my TechEd IP pool. Select which logical network you want the IP pool to go on. Now, if you didn't already create the network site, you can do it in advance, but I'm going to use the existing one. So this would be the pool for ShowLAN 0, that subnet. Give an IP range, et cetera. Fill in whatever the information is appropriate. There you go. So now we have an IP pool. We have a logical network. We can now go and see, we can now hook this up to the physical computers that are, or your server, your Hyper-V hosts that are now in these different locations. So I actually go to my keynote area. You look at my hosts that are there. I can go to the properties. I go to the hardware and the network adapter. There you go. There's my TechEd logical network. If this network adapter is in trunk mode and has access to all of these VLANs, then you know, I can go ahead and leave all of them there. If I know it's only connected to a specific one, then I can do that specific one as well. So that helps me really filter down so that when I go to deploy, so I'm only going to go add it to that one. Let's now create a VM that's going to use that logical network we just created that we want to put on the TechNet, the TechEd ShowLAN. So here we go. Let's create a VM. I need to go to my VMs and services view. Create a virtual machine. I'm going to use an existing template. So we will only customize and configure the IP addresses on VMs that we deploy from a template, because those are the only ones that we will actually do the customization on and run sysprep through. So here's my template that I'm going to deploy. And if I go through, I'm just going to give it a random name. Now I'm going to go down to my virtual network adapter on here. And I'm going to say which logical network. I'm going to change it to the one I just created. And then I'm going to go through and I'm going to let the intelligent placement algorithm now figure out what are the places, the hosts that are appropriate for this, this VM to run on that can now meet the needs of the VM. So it's going to run, and you can see it picked none for a variety of reasons. Logical network. Oh, wait, which one was the one I connected? Logical network. Make sure I actually save that logical network. So like I said, if it fails, it's often because you don't have the right logical network connected. TechEd ShowLAN. It is correct. All right, well, I'm not sure why that's working, but I'll have to troubleshoot that later. We'll move on. So I create the VM, attach it to the logical network, and then it would deploy. And placement would only pick the hosts that are valid. So for some reason, I didn't hook something up correctly. And I'll have to go through and troubleshoot that. All right, the next thing I want to show you is how to add a load balancer. So if we move on to the fabric and look at under the load balancer section. So I'm now going to, I have an F5 big IP that I want to add to my environment. I'm setting it up for the first time. I'm going to go down to the load balancer. And I'm going to need a set of accounts, so I can go create a runAS account that contains the credentials for my load balancer. I can do it here if I haven't done it in advance. Go through and say which of my host groups this load balancer is available on. So I'll say the keynote. Go through, select which manufacturer model. Now I have to pre-install the provider for this load balancer vendor in advance for it to show up here. So that's something that I've already done. Once you've done that, though, then it'll show up here. And it's simply a matter of configuring its address to get it that you can connect to. You have a front end and a back end. The front end basically has the VIPs that you're going to be pulling from. This is the virtual IP. And then the dynamic IPs on the backside that grow and shrink depending on how you scale out your VM, so we need to say where we're going to get those from. For example, I'll pull from here, one on Katosa, one on Corp. And then the nice thing that we have on this panel is you can actually test the connection before you finish. This is a good way to make sure that you can actually talk to the load balancer. So you can see that the load balancer provider works correctly and that all of the tests pass. So that basically verifies that my credentials are correct, I have the right IP address, the right port. Basically everything works. I can go through. Oh. There'd be light. Okay. It's a good way to wake everybody up that, it's late afternoon. It makes it a little brighter. We can also get up and stretch. It might be a good time to do that, too. Oh. Okay, so now we've added this load balancer. We can now go through and configure VIP templates so that now when we deploy our services, we can create a VIP template. I can call this my web server. Say which virtual IP port I want. I want port 80. Say what type. So here's where I mentioned before. You can do a generic one that'll apply across the board, or a specific one for a particular type of load balancer. And then when we do that, it gets a little bit more specific on the types of settings you can do. I'm just going to leave a lot of these as is. been finished. Now this is available for use. Now you can use this in your service. It's ready to go. Okay, so we've talked about load balancers. One more thing I want to talk about before we move on to Service Pack 1, MAC address pools. So here's where we manage the MAC address pools I talked about earlier. You have to stay within these ranges. These are the ranges that we have basically available for use with Hyper-V and VMware. But you can define your own ranges if you want to basically break these large ranges up into smaller ranges. So you basically just do that by creating a MAC pool, say where you give the MAC pool a name, define a host group for it, or scope it to a host group, and then you give it a range. And that range needs to be basically within these values. Now, you, of course, need to edit this one first so that you don't overlap. We make sure that you can't overlap. If it overlaps, as I'm going to show you right now, you'll get an error. I can actually type that in. C:00. I'm going to copy and paste. I don't have to type that again. I don't particularly enjoy typing MAC addresses myself. I don't know if any of you do. And so this will give us an error saying that it overlaps. So you have to be careful that you know your pools don't overlap. I can go in and change this, you know, split this up into pieces, and then they won't overlap. But then once you've scoped a host group, whenever you deploy a VM into that host group, it's going to get a MAC address from one of these pools. That's it for MAC pools. So let's switch back to my slides. Oh, let's talk a little bit about PowerShell. We do want to show you how PowerShell works a little bit behind the scenes. You know, creating a new logical network is very straightforward. All you need is the name. Logical network is really just, you know, as I mentioned, it's a container for your logical network definitions. When you get down to the logical network definition, though, that's where you have to have the information about your subnets and your VLANs. So if you're really, you know, ambitious, you could write a script that would go out, talk to your network tool, pull this information in, and automatically set it using, you know, these commands that you see up here. You can create your logical network, your logical network definition, and then you can start to create your IP pools as well. Basically, the new SC static IP address pool will create the IP pool, giving the same basic information you used when doing it through the UI. One thing that's useful about PowerShell, you can get more information about the utilization of your IP pools through PowerShell than you can get from our UI. For performance reasons, we don't actually go out and query all of the utilization of the IP pools every time you go in and open the IP pool properties. But you can get that information through PowerShell when you need it. So this basically, first thing you want to do is you want to get your SC static IP address pool. That'll return an object. For that IP pool, and then you can query, you can get SCIP address to find out you know, which addresses are in use. Now, the interesting thing here is the state. You know, normally, under normal circumstances, the addresses that are checked out are assigned, but occasionally an address can get checked out but unassigned. And we internally would call those zombie addresses. These are addresses that basically we've somehow lost track of the state of whether or not it's assigned or not, and we don't want to revoke it because we don't want to put an address back in the pool that may get checked out again if we don't know for certain that it's you know, it's not actually free. The only time when this should happen is if you remove a host from VMM if you delete a host from VMM and force its removal first so that we don't know what happened to those VMs. You remove the host from management, those VMs are still up and running, but it's no longer managed by VMM. We'll put them in this unassigned state, but keep them granted to those missing VM objects. So you can go in, there's a commandlet called revoke SCIP address. You can run it on the output from this for the ones you want to revoke. You can filter by unassigned, and then just pipe it directly into the revoke SCIP address, and that'll basically pull them back in. If you know that was a host that got deleted, you can pull those addresses back if you know for certain they're not in use anymore. That's a nice little trick to do. All right, so now on to the fun stuff. So what's new in Service Pack 1? All right, so around networking, how many of you went to VJ's Service Pack 1 overview yesterday afternoon? Any of you? Some of you got a little bit of a peek of what's coming. all of the work we're doing is focused around connectivity and capability, and I'll talk about what that means. But we wanted to have this separation of connectivity and capability. If we didn't have the separation and define them together, then what would happen is for every different type of connectivity you had, you'd have to repeat your capability settings over and over again. So you want to have this separation. Hopefully, you know, you'll see what I mean as we go along. Basically, the idea is that it'll reduce the number of objects of each type that you have. So what does connectivity mean to us, though? So first thing is, when you start to introduce multi-tenancy, you have this notion that within a tenant, you want your VMs to be able to talk to each other, but you don't want different tenants to be able to have their VMs talk to each other. So we need to introduce this concept of multi-tenancy, and then once you have multi-tenancy, isolation, so that you can keep your multiple tenants isolated. There's really no point in having multiple tenants if they can all see and interact with each other's VMs and networks. So the next thing is mobility. You want to be able to move your VMs around within your physical network, but still keep the VM connectivity that you desire. So you want to be mobile both within your physical networks and then within your VMs as well. And then once we have this mobility that separates the physical IP from the guest IP, you can then start to bring your own IP, because now we have this separation. And in this case, it's provided through network virtualization. So when we talk about capabilities, that now it basically defines what your VNIC can do on the network that it's connected to. So this defines things like quality of service. What's your maximum bandwidth, your minimum bandwidth? It doesn't affect whether or not you can talk to another VM, just how much bandwidth are you going to get out of there. Security, so settings like whether or not you're allowed to, the DHCP guard that determines whether or not you're allowed to have a DHCP server in your VM. Other settings for security, basically limit the types of things that you can do, but still within the level of connectivity that you have. Different optimizations, this is around capabilities such as SRIOV, just some of your network optimizations that you have available. I'll show you those properties so that you can see what those consist of. And then monitoring, being able to, have tools that are able to look into your network and understand what's going on. That we all lump under capability. So in order to provide these, this separation and provide, these features, we introduced two new objects. For connectivity, we're introducing VM networks. And these VM networks basically provide a tenant of VMM with their own essential isolated network. There are multiple ways that we implement these VM networks. There are different types that I'll talk about in a minute. But that's the basic goal, is to provide this connectivity that I just described. And then along the line of capability, we're introducing this new concept called a logical switch, which ties in with the Hyper-V extensible virtual switch. So the logical switch essentially defines what the port on that extensible switch is capable of. So the logical switch has to know about what extensions are available and what the settings are of the native switch itself, so that we can configure those and make them available to the user. All right, so I'm going to start kind of diving deeper into what we mean by connectivity and VM networks in particular. So with multi-tenancy, we need to make sure that your VM network has an owner. So when you create a VM network, the person that creates it is the owner. So that can be you, it can be whoever you give the ability to create it. We're going to allow tenant admins. That's a new user role that we're adding in 2012 Service Pack 1. Tenant admins are going to be able to create their own VM networks, but we will have a revocable action, so you can control. If you don't want your tenant admins to be able to create their own, you can let the fabric admins or the full admins do that. But of course, if the full admins are the ones that are creating it, they need to be able to share it out with the actual self-service users or the different tenants that you have. So these VM networks have an access list. So you can control who can actually get access, which user roles can access those VM networks. And then isolation. There are multiple ways of isolating, or multiple types. First of all, we have no isolation for your isolation. Network virtualization is a method of isolation. That's probably the most flexible VLANs, what a lot of you are using today for your isolation, but that requires coordination between essentially the server admin and the network admin to get those VLANs created correctly. And then you have external isolation. This is the case where you have a virtual switch extension that's capable of implementing its own isolation, but VMM doesn't know what that is. It's really, really hidden from us. So we support that as well. Talk about all four of those in detail in a minute. So being able to bring your own IP, this is a capability we want. Once we can virtualize the network, we can layer a different address space on top of your physical address space. That then lets you define whatever IP address space you want. So if you're going into a hoster and you are a tenant in a hoster, you can basically specify what the address IP address space you want is so that it can map back into your on-premise address space. And the mobility. We're making sure that VNICs connect to VM networks, but the VM networks are still connected to logical networks. So you can move around that VM within your logical network regardless of what the subnets are that back it. As long as that logical network is connected, you can move it around. The VM address, though, doesn't have to change. That's the nice thing. That's how you can move it around. Today, if you want to move your VM from one location to another and the subnets are different, you have to go into the guest and change your addresses. But with network virtualization, we have that mobility, so you can move, you know, across subnets. We also want VM networks to be able to span clouds so that you can deploy VMs in different clouds that are able to talk to each other through the same VM network. And then, as I mentioned before, with network virtualization, your IP address follows your migration around, regardless of what the actual physical infrastructure is. All right, so let's talk about each type of VM network in more detail. We have this no isolation one. It's kind of funny because I lumped it under the isolation category. But we actually have a type called no isolation. And this is basically a direct pass-through to your logical network. The idea is that some VMs need to get to the logical network. So if you have, for example, System Center in a box, and you need to manage your Hyper-V hosts, those Hyper-V hosts aren't on VM networks, they're on the Fabric network. So you need to be able to connect to those directly. So we allow you to create a VM network that's for that purpose. The other reason why we have it is for upgrade. We want to make sure that when you upgrade from 2012 to Service Pack 1, all your VMs today that are connected to logical networks will have a VM network that they can connect to in the future to offer the same capabilities that you had before, or the same connectivity that you had before. So whenever we upgrade, we're automatically going to create a no isolation VM network for each logical network that you have in your system to begin with. Now, it's a one-to-one mapping between VM network of no isolation type and your logical network. So once you create one VM network with no isolation, you can't create another, because then, since there's no isolation, they would basically be the same thing. So we limit it in that way. Now, of course, this VM network can be shared with, you know, whatever scope you want, whether you want to keep it for the full admins or give the tenants access to it. You can do that, control that in the same way as any other VM network. Before I start to talk about the next type of VM network, I want to talk a little bit about network virtualization. This is really, you know, where we start to talk about software-defined networking that I, you know, had the big obelisk of at the beginning. You know, this is the shift that we're seeing. The idea is that, you know, we're doing for networking what happened with physical servers and virtualization, you know, years ago when virtualization first came into existence. With server virtualization, you basically run your OS on a virtual machine, which is separate from the physical server. With network virtualization, the same thing except for the network. The network that the VM sees is not tied to the physical network that is actually within your data center. By being able to do this, you can actually have multiple of these networks. They can overlap in their IP space. They can be separated from each other. And you know, you have a lot of flexibility in where they can go, because you're no longer tied to staying within the subnet that VM was created under originally. How does it work, you're probably wondering? Well, so the guest, it has an IP address. It has to have something that it talks to, and has to be able to talk to other guests as well within that address space that it knows about. And the same thing for every tenant. You know, and they could have the exact same address space. That's fine. Now, in your data center, though, when you deploy all these and spread them out, they could all be running the same workloads. They have the same addresses. They could be on the same hosts. Your provider address space, though, has its own subnet. It has its own layout. We need a way to map these across, right, so that your blue VM 10.0.0.5 knows where 10.0.0.7, because once these packets go out on the network, on your provider network, you know, the only thing that the switches are going to see are the 192.168.4.11 address. So that's where System Center and VMM comes into play. Because what VMM does is it manages that virtualization policy. It keeps the tables saying where 10.0.0.5 is, so that as these packets go out of host 1, it goes through the Windows Network Virtualization filter, and that's what then will encapsulate the packets so that on the data center network, it has a routable address, you know, 192.168 address. But once it gets back into host 2 from host 1, it can get then unencapsulated or decat. And then once it gets into the virtual switch, it can use the regular, the customer address space, or the CA, as we call it. All right. So System Center VMM, it has an agent that runs on every host, as many of you know. And that agent is what's responsible for making sure that every host has the policy updates. If Blue One migrates over to host 2, then VMM is responsible for making sure that all the hosts get the policy updated so that they'll know where to direct that traffic. So when something comes in and wants to talk to 10.0.0.5, it knows now that it's on host number 2. So we did a lot of work to make sure that, you know, VMM is able to manage that and make sure that when you do live migrations, when you create your VMs, destroy your VMs, all these policies get updated correctly and we don't leak policy table entries on all of your hosts. So now within the VM network that's of type network virtualization, you know, you have a way now to create these networks on the fly. We consider a VM network to be a single routing domain. What that means is within a routing domain, you can have multiple subnets. These subnets, like the logical networks we have today, are all able to talk to each other. And they're able to do that because within Hyper-V network virtualization, there's a router that's built in that's able to route between these subnets within a routing domain. That router, though, makes sure that the routing domains stay isolated from each other and they can't talk to each other. That's one key difference for our implementation is that, you know, you can have multiple subnets in there. Yep, go ahead. If you're using yeah, are you talking about just the performance of it in general? Is that what you mean by overhead or the? Are you talking about the application in the guest? Well, I know that a lot of work's been done within Windows to make sure that these packets can talk to each other and route to each other. So. I know a lot of the Windows networking team is in the room. We can ask that after this session, and then we can get the details on that, how they were able to handle that and address it. All right. So how does the object model within VMM, handle this virtualized network? You know, one thing that you have to keep track of is if you do have a provider address space and a customer address space, now you have essentially a second subnet and a second IP pool that's associated only with the VM network. So in this way, we keep track of what you have on the provider space separate from what's on the customer address space. And in that way, you know, each VM network has its own VM subnets, it has its own IP pools, and if you have multiple VM networks, you can have multiple of those that overlap. There's no conflict. Now, of course, once you have these isolated networks, you have to have a way to get in and out of them. So we are also adding into VMM, this will be available in our beta release, the ability to manage and configure gateways for network virtualization. This diagram here shows you a little bit about how it'll work. The idea is that there are two basic types of gateways. Routing gateway, that's where if you are entirely on-premise, you're virtualizing your networks just to give you more flexibility so that it's separate from what you have in the data center. You can just route straight through the gateway. In this case, the Contoso gateway will route from your virtualized environment back to your normal physical network. Now, it's important that these subnets that you're using are routable subnets, though. There are some limitations to what you can do with a routing gateway versus a VPN gateway that's in a hosted environment where overlap is expected. I mentioned earlier on that there's this network virtualization router that runs within Windows that's able to route between your subnets. Because that router is what your VMs point at, it's always the lowest IP address in your subnet, we have to have an extra subnet that's able to act as the gateway subnet. That's what I've labeled here as the subnet G. Now, VMM will automatically create that subnet. You won't even see it in VMM, but it'll be there, and that's what routes through the gateway so that we can actually, when we set up the policy within the Windows network virtualization router, we can say any packets that don't match the addresses within the subnets, forward it on to the gateway, and then it'll do the right thing. When you have a VPN, the model is very similar. The main difference is that you don't just have one gateway, you have two endpoints for your VPN. We have an extra part of the interface for the gateway device that you'll need to onboard that lets you specify the VPN connection information so that, you know, if you are at a hosted environment, Fabricam that has a VPN gateway, you can then connect back to your on-premise VPN gateway, your Contoso VPN gateway, so that we'll pass the right information across. So in order to add the gateway, we have a provider interface that we're working with different vendors to implement, so you'll be able to buy gateway devices as well. All right, third type of VM network is a VLAN-based VM network. With the VLAN-based VM network, you basically have one VLAN per VM network. This is what we get asked a lot today with logical networks is, you know, well, so I'm using VLANs today for isolation. How do I do that with a logical network? Well, as I mentioned earlier, logical networks weren't designed for isolation. So we're adding that ability in now. So basically what we do is we take the VLAN from the logical network definition and basically pass it on and associate that with the VM network. Now, there's a new property we had to add, though, to the logical network to basically say that this logical network is made up of logical network definitions that are not connected. Because in order to be isolated, these VLANs, you know, can't talk to each other, which is one of the key properties of a logical network we have with 2012 before SP1. So we have this property of not connected, so you can say this logical network is not connected, so then we can start to pull these logical network definitions out and assign them to VM networks. When we do that, we copy the IP subnet, the subnet VLAN over into the VM subnet, but we reference the IP pool that's, you know, defined on your physical space, because these VLANs really are part of your physical address space, your physical network. So we don't copy them over, which would potentially, you know, allow the address to get reused, which wouldn't be allowed. Last type of VM network is external. This is where a switch extension, I'll be talking about switch extensions in a minute, is able to implement the isolation. It's really opaque to VMM. We can't see what it's doing. But basically, when we integrate with the switch extension manager, it starts reporting back that this VM network exists, it's providing this VM subnet, and this IP pool. We don't actually know, notice there's no actual subnet here or VLAN here, because we don't actually know how it's doing the isolation. We don't really care, to be honest. We just know that there is an isolated network, so that when we connect the VM, the VNIC, to the port on the switch, we'll tell the switch, that port, what subnet it's being connected to, and then the switch extension will manage the isolation itself. Again, internally, however, the switch extension. So we're working with Cisco with their Nexus 1000B for them to be able to provide this type of isolation. All right, so let me quickly show you VM networks. I'm going to go through this quickly because we don't have a huge amount of time. And we've shown this in multiple places before. All right, so switch over to the machine. So this is, again, the CTP2 release. This will be available tomorrow. You'll be able to download this and try it out yourself in your own environments. But basically what I did is I pre-created a logical network. I'm going to basically show you how to create a network virtualized VM network. So I have a regular logical network with a regular old IP pool, very simple address space, 10.0.0.0. Plenty of addresses available. This is my PA space. This represents the PA space in my environment. I now also have gone and, in order to actually create the VM network, it's simply a matter of going to our VMs and Services view, and there's a new tab here called VM Networks. If we go to the VM Networks, we have a new option called VM Network. You can see what networks exist already. It lists them here. You can see I have one for Tailspin Toys. Their fierce competitor, Wingtip Toys, also has a VM Network on this server. And I can go up here and I can create a new one. I can just go create VM Network. Give it whatever I want. I call it TechEd. say which logical network I want that VM network to be on. There it is. And then I define what VM subnet I want. I can basically give anything I want, and it won't collide with the ones that already exist. I can give 10.0.0.0/24. And I can add another one, Greg 2, call it 10.0.0, 10.1.0. Does have to be a different subnet, because the Windows Network Virtualization Router will handle, you know, sending the packets between these two subnets. I don't have to configure any of my switches. I don't have to configure any of my physical devices to handle this. It's all within Windows. It's all defined by the software. So I finished that. Now I've created my own VM network. This created the routing domain. It created the virtual subnets. I can go create my IP pool now. That's simply, it's very similar to how you created your IP pool before. Call it Greg IP. I say which VM network I want to create it on. It's my TechEd network. Which VM subnet I want to create this IP pool for. And now VMM, when you create your VMs, can automatically pull addresses from here for that the VM will see and will be set in the guest. You can see that we start the IP pool for VM networks on as .2. The .1 address, or the lowest address in your subnet, is reserved for the router that's built in. So we automatically start at .2. And then you go through and create the address pool as you would before. So now we have an address pool. So we have a number of VMs that are already up and running. I have 4 of them here. You can see for the 2 tenants. That's the wrong one. You can see that they are able to talk to each other. But if I try to ping this the same .2 address over here that this guy is pinging, you can see that they truly are isolated. This one can't talk to it. If I do a live migration, the pings will continue. You won't lose that. So it is isolated. All right. Switch back. So just a little bit about the PowerShell. PowerShell is very similar to what you would do with logical networks, except now it's a VM network. One nice thing about VMM is most of our dialogues, our wizards, they have a ViewScript button somewhere at the end. You can click the ViewScript and see the scripts that will get created, and you'll get something very much like this. You can try it out really easily. You don't have to write this down. You can just basically generate this yourself. But basically what we do is you take your logical network, you create a VM network, you then add VM subnets, and then you use the same IP address pool object that you used before, but this time instead of associating it with a logical network definition, you're associating it with a VM subnet. That's really the only difference for the IP address pool. All right, so that's it for connectivity. Let's move on and start talking about capability. So how are we doing capability with our logical switch concept? So capability defines how a virtual network adapter is able to use its connection, quality of service, security monitoring, and as I mentioned before, it's provided by switches, the virtual switch and its extensions. So a little bit about the Hyper-V extensible switch. If you went to one of the network sessions earlier, you should already know this. But just for review, for those of you that didn't go, it is extensible. The extensions you add in, you can add extensions, but when you add them, they don't replace the functionality of the built-in switch. That's one key feature of the Hyper-V switch. It is a first-class citizen, so live migration will work. VMM makes sure the port profile gets set appropriately, and then when you live migrate, the port profile goes with it. It is a public API, so there are a number of vendors that are working on these extensions. I'm going to show you 2 today. I'm going to show you the Cisco Nexus 1000V. I'm also going to show you a switch extension by a company called Inmon that does an S-Flow extension. So there is a very robust partner ecosystem that's being built around this. So you're going to see a lot more partners building these extensions. You saw a number of demos if you went to the Hyper-V session on the virtual switch. And then, of course, we're also making sure that they are high quality by having a logo program involved, so you can make sure that they will be implemented correctly. So the extensions, they do run within the switch. I'm just going to quickly go over this. If you want to know more about this, I have the Hyper-V session referenced at the end. You can look that up and watch it online. So now once you have these extensions that can be configured within the switch, The extensions themselves need to get their configuration. They need to know what to do, and they get that from their own network management console. There's this server that runs out there somewhere. The vendor of the extension will provide it, and they have basically what they refer to as a policy database that contains, this port is able to do these things. It's able to have this level of bandwidth. These firewall ports are open. These sorts of things, depending on what type of extension it is. VMM comes into play because somebody needs to set those port profiles when you create the VM so that the extension will know what to do. So VMM has a new plugin interface that allows VMM to be able to talk to these network management consoles, or network management, or virtual switch extension managers, as we call them. This plugin, we're working with a number of vendors to make these plugins available so that their switches can be deployed through VMM. As part of this integration, we want to make sure that we can deploy the switch extension on the host so we can actually install it, enable it, and then configure the port profiles on the VM when you need them. A little bit about how the integration works with the extension manager. So your components from the previous diagram, you have your VMM server, you have the vendor's virtual switch extension manager, or the management console, and then you have a Hyper-V host. So VMM defines this extension manager provider interface, similar to what we have for load balancers. It's a PowerShell module that the vendors implement. They will then write their provider, make it available to all of you so that you can install it. Once you install it and add the management console to VMM, one key thing about these management consoles is that they know a lot about the network. As I mentioned earlier on, the virtualization admin has to be talking to the network admin with VMM 2012 to make sure that you get the logical networks, the IP pools, all your network definitions, import into VMM correctly or entered into VMM correctly. And it's, it can be prone to errors. Well, when we're integrated with these network management consoles, we're able to import a lot of this network information in from the console itself, because that's generally where the network admin lives. They live in those tools. So they're able to define the network how they want it, how they configure the switches through that network, through that tool, and then VMM is able to import from that manager. So in the Nexus 1000V example, I'll show you some examples of what we've imported from there. Once we know what profiles are available and what the networks are like, then we start to deploy VMs, and we can configure the switch. When we attach the VNIC to that switch, we can set the port profile on that switch port and make sure that it's up and running the way it needs to on every host where it needs to get deployed. And then once we set the port profile, then the actual policies, the extension itself, knows how to query back to the management console and exchange the necessary information to be able to actually implement that policy. Now, when you expand this out over multiple hosts, it can start to get complicated, right? You have every one of your hosts has its own settings. It has this set of extensions. And you need to make sure they're all configured the same way across every single host you have. If you don't, then when you live migrate, your VM's not going to work correctly. It's also just a lot of tedious work if you have to set these up individually. So in order to solve this problem, we're introducing a concept called a logical switch. Some of you are familiar with similar distributed switches from other products. So this logical switch is basically a central location where you can define your extensions, the settings for your switches, and then you then apply that to your hosts so that the same settings become available. You only have to set them up once, and then every host that you've applied this logical switch to basically gets an instance of the logical switch on it. It's actually an instance of the virtual switch, but it's configured the way we want it, the way you need it to be configured. And it's consistent across the board, so you can live migrate, and your settings will go with you. So single logical representation of all these switch instances across your environment. We expect you'll have a small number of these in your environment, because you only want to define these once. A little bit about how the object model for these logical switches. You start with the logical switch in the same way you started with your logical network. This is essentially your container. You can think of it as your template in a way. Now, first thing you're going to do, and this is actually optional, you don't have to add switch extensions. It'll work perfectly fine. You can do all the native settings without switch extensions and define port profiles as well for native settings. But you can add extensions. You can add multiple extensions to your logical switch. So in this example, I'm saying I want the Cisco Nexus 1000 and the Inmon S-Flow extension available. Once you have the extensions, then you can start to configure what we call an uplink port profile set. Now, the reason why this port profile set exists is because for every one of your extensions, you have to have a port profile that you can basically select for that extension. So you have to know how they're all going to work together, and that's what this profile set defines, is how, you know, one group for each set of each extension that you've added, you know, pick a port profile that'll work with the other extension that you've added. And then what are the native settings for that as well? So you can define multiple of these uplink port profiles depending on what type of uplink ports you're going to have. The uplink ports are the ports that connect the virtual switch to the physical adapter. So that's what defines your basically the way out of the virtual switch. Now, once you have your uplink port defined, you know, you have to have a way to define the settings for your virtual ports as well. These are the ones that the VMs are going to connect to. So if you look, we also have, so the virtual port profile set is very similar to the uplink port profile set, except it's for virtual port profiles. There is a difference you'll see in our UI and what the extensions return. But we have this other layer called a port classification that we put in front of it. This port classification separates the port profile sets that are very much tied to your extensions and essentially our fabric object. It separates it from what the self-service user is going to see. These are what get associated to the cloud, which is what the self-service user interacts with. And these are what you actually specify when you're connecting your VNIC. So the classification is very much like our storage classifications, if you're familiar with that from VMM 2012. But this is really the object that this is where the self-service user interacts with these. And again, it's to keep it separate. The other reason why we want to keep it separate is if you have different environments within, or different host groups within your VMM environment, use different switch extensions, you have different network vendors, you know, in one building versus another, you'll have different port profile sets for each of those vendors. And so we need to have a global way of letting you connect your VNICs once to the classification, and then it can get reused anywhere. So it goes back to the very beginning when I said, you know, we want our templates to be able to be deployed anywhere. So that's what the classification's for. Then finally, once you have all this, you need to be able to connect your switch to a physical NIC. And the physical NIC, when you go to your host or when you do an OS deployment, you'll be able to basically say, I want this physical NIC connected to this B42 switch, and I want to use this uplink port profile set. And that'll define the settings that get applied to the physical NIC. If you don't have any switch extensions, you're just using all the native capabilities, this is essentially what the diagram looks like. It's a little bit simpler. All right, so let me show you it within VMM itself. Okay, I'm going to switch over to my other VM server. So this is not available in CTV2 yet. It'll be available in our beta release. But what you see here is, so first of all, in advance, I already went and I went to my setting, or I went and I installed the providers for Cisco Nexus 1000 and the Inmon S-Flow provider. So here you can see the providers are installed alongside with the NLB provider that gets installed by default with VMM. So I have these two providers available, they're active, and they're working. So now I need to actually add the extension manager. So if I go back up to my fabric, there are four new nodes here under networking that weren't there before. We have the switch extension manager node. This is where you actually see the manager tools or servers that are what contain the port profiles. So we have a wizard that you can use to add the manager, so virtual switch extension manager. And you can go through, and it's very similar to what I showed you for load balancers. You basically specify the connection information, you scope it, and as soon as you add this, we start to pull in information that's available from from that network manager. So for example, if I go to my Cisco Nexus 1000V console, I can actually go and do a query where I can show you the fabric networks that my network admin would have defined. So I have this show, let me zoom in on that so you can see, show fabric network. And when I hit enter, yeah, I created this Contoso fabric network. I have the show network definition, so this is basically maps to my, my logical network definitions. I created an external LND here as well on the Contoso fabric network. So there are a number of objects that the network admin will be defining in their tool. And then once you added that to VMM, since I've already added the Cisco my Nexus 1000, you'll see that that Contoso FN that I had created, that my network admin had created, automatically appears in VMM, and it's available for use. And you know, the VMM admin didn't have to touch it. It can start being used immediately. So that's one of the nice things that we're doing to basically reduce the chance of errors so that your network admins will work together more efficiently. You know, the network admins are still responsible for defining what the network looks like, but they can get the information to the virtualization admin, who's actually the one that needs to use that information. You can see this, if I open this up, you can see also that it has, it's not connected, so there's the new not connected property that I talked about, and there's the network site defined with no subnets, again, because we don't, in VLANs, because we don't know how this is being isolated. There is also a VM network that's being imported from the external side, so this is now the external VM network. If I go up here to the top and go to my create VM network, and I select that Contoso FN, I'll call this Greg, you can see that you can specify the externally supplied VM network, and this is the Cisco VM network. We imported this VM network. It's of the external isolation type, and we can now create this, and it will automatically create it. Now I can start to use that for my tenants. Here's a pass-through network. You can also create pass-through networks as well. So I do create new VM network. Depending on what logical network you select, so if I select CORP, which I don't think I have one created for yet, CORP is a connected network, so we go down a different path so we figure out what type of logical network it is. I'm going to do CORP pass-through. This is the no isolation type that it's going to create. No isolation. You have to actually enable you can control which fabric networks or logical networks you're able to use for Hyper-V network virtualization, so that's just a property of the logical network. I'm going to say no isolation. Now I've basically created a VM network, so my VMs can now connect directly to the fabric in the same way they could connect to logical networks before. Going back to the fabric, so I've added my extension manager, now I'm going to create a logical switch. I already have one created here, but I'm going to create another one. I'm going to go create logical switch. And the logical switch, as you saw before from the object model, it basically consists of extensions, which are optional. You can do none of them if you want, or all of them, as appropriate. You scope it, say where it can be used. You create your uplink port profile sets. So here in this case, I've imported from my Nexus 1000V the available port profiles. I only went and created one in advance. And then I also have my native uplink port profiles. These are what control whether or not this switch can handle Hyper-V network virtualization. They also control, you can also define the logical networks and logical network definitions that can be used by this port by this switch, and that'll get applied to the physical adapter automatically. So if you remember earlier when I went into the 2012 console, when I went in to the host properties and the physical NIC and showed you how to assign the logical network, you can now put this on an uplink port profile, and then it'll get assigned automatically to every host that this switch is connected to. So it lets you centrally define your port files and reuse them over and over again. So same thing for virtual ports. One thing we do in the UI is we do hide the fact that there is this virtual port profile set. Because there is a one-to-one mapping between the classification and the virtual port profile set, we don't actually show the profile set. We basically let you select the classification directly that you're gonna implement in the switch. So I'm going to create the gold classification. I'm going to pick the virtual port profile for the Nexus 1000 that I want to use, and then I'm going to say which of my unrestricted, since this is the offering a higher level of service, I want to let these Phoenix do whatever they want. Then I hit finish, and now I have this logical switch defined. The port profiles that I was referring to are all managed here under the native port profiles section. And you can basically go through and do create native port profile. You give it a name that describes what this profile, what settings it contains. So I'm going to call this Greg port profile. So if I do uplink, now here I can say which logical network definitions are supported by this uplink, whether or not I want this uplink to support Hyper-V network virtualization. When you check this off and you apply it to a host, we'll automatically enable the Hyper-V network virtualization filter on that adapter, so it's ready for use. If I go back and select a virtual, then you can see the settings on the virtual profile. So these are the offload settings. So these are basically the performance settings talked about. You have VMQ, SRIOV, IPsec, task offloading, your security settings, these are the ones provided by the native switch, and then your bandwidth settings, as far as minimum, maximum settings that are allowed. So that offers your quality of service. Port classification just gives you a global view of what classifications you have available. So you can create one from here, but it's really just a name at this point until you've associated it with a switch. So the last thing I'm going to do on here is show you how to actually connect that logical switch to the host. So you can do it through our OS deployment process, but if you have your host already deployed, you need to go to the host properties. And you basically just say that this host, there you go, under virtual switches, you can say, I want this adapter to connect to this logical switch. I'm going to do the one I just created. Which uplink you want, only created one. You'll generally have a small number, if not one. And hit OK. Give me a warning that I may lose connectivity. And it's going to go out, and it's going to go out and basically, first thing it'll do is it'll install the extensions, if they haven't been installed already. It'll create the virtual switch. It'll then enable the extensions on the switch. And now it's basically up and ready for use. And there we go. We just basically created an instance of that logical switch on the host. So now we can start to deploy VMs using those capabilities. All right. So quickly switch back. Last thing I want to talk about, IP address management. So many of you might be aware that there's a new feature in Windows Server 2012 for IP address management. Now, if you think about it, DHCP manages IP addresses, the DHCP server, VMM manages IP addresses. Makes sense that there's a way to get those pools out of VMM into the IPAM tool so that you can see how VMM's IP address pools relate to the ones that aren't being owned by other components, you know, like your DHCP server. So we include a script for that. It's basically a script you can run one time, you know, if you just want to get the data imported once, or the script can auto-configure itself to run as a scheduled task so that, you know, every day when you get your giant cup of coffee in the morning, you can basically look at your updated IP address utilization. The script is actually very easy to run, and I'm going to do that in my last 2 minutes. I'm going to go back to this VMM server. Go to this console here. And so if you navigate to, I'm already in the right directory, good. If you navigate to your CD layout, when you get the install, there's a scripts folder, and in that scripts folder is your IPAM integration. You need to do what's called dot sourcing to load it within PowerShell. And then once it's loaded, it'll take a minute, and it'll tell you then, you know, what your parameters are. It'll give you a little bit of help. Once it's loaded, then it's simply a matter of doing invoke IPAM integration. There we go. Don't want to update my help right now. Okay, there. So now it's loaded. If you want to see my IPAM server, you can see right now it is empty. All I have to do is run it. Invoke IPAM integration, specify which server, IPAM server name, hv-h01. That's going to run. You'll see, yes, I do want to allow it. Gives you a little bit of help. It's going to go start importing. I can go back to my IPAM server. Now I can immediately, once I refresh, start to see my utilization. I can see if my pools are overused. I can see if there's overlap with other pools, you know, if my DHCP server is conflicting. Basically, any of the capabilities of the IPAM tool, you can now see with the pools that come from VMM. And we also label them appropriately, so you know if it came from a logical network versus a VM network, who owned the VM network, which logical network came from. So we actually have a great integration here. We work with the IPAM team on building this integration as well. So with that, I believe that concludes everything. Just recap. We talked about all that. Related concept, all these sessions are pretty much over now, so I encourage you to go back and watch the recordings. That's why we still list them at the end of the day. So you can go back and watch them. In particular, this VIR 303, that's where you will learn about all these concepts in great detail, how the platform implements them versus, you know, System Center. And that concludes. If there are any questions, feel free to ask them now or stick around. I can stick around to answer any questions you might have. All the typical stuff. So thank you.